Welcome to Eastern Standard, produced for WEKU by Dynamics Productions. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for joining us. Our focus this week:
childcare is a fundamental piece of our economy that makes it possible for parents to go to work.
In Kentucky, unfortunately, and in so many states, we don't invest in childcare at a level that allows the small business to maintain a level of quality.
It's an incredibly vital service in society, but it's also one that is really troubled in a lot of ways.
As a working mom myself, I had an infant and a toddler in childcare at once, and the cost was $400 a month more than my mortgage.
These concerns about a disconnect between public investment in childcare and a robust workforce were being raised back in the earliest days of the pandemic, April of 2020, when we heard from Lynette Fraga of Child Care Aware.
Child care is an essential service, and it is so critically important, particularly during the very challenging time we're in right now, and particularly for essential workers, that we take care of our providers as well as our parents that work in these sectors that we need in order to get through this difficult time.
And these concerns were heard here again in late October from Kentucky Chamber of Commerce Senior Analyst Charles All.
A lot of working parents are only able to work if they are able to find a place or a service that can watch their children while they're working. Well, that childcare sector was already very vulnerable, very unstable prior to the start of the pandemic. But when the pandemic hit, a lot of these services closed. A lot of them had to scale back the services that they provided. And so that put a huge strain on particularly working women, mothers. And we saw a big drop in the number of women who are participating in the workforce. And we can connect that very, very closely to the impact that this pandemic had on the childcare sector.
But along with these concerns, there are some positive developments now happening that you'll hear about during this hour. First, a picture of Kentucky's childcare landscape. In his role as a senior policy analyst at the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, Dustin Pugel focuses on health policy and safety net programs, and he has just completed such an analysis. Thanks for joining us, Dustin.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So in your analysis, you point out that the child care industry has a profound effect on the broader community. How so?
You know, we know from years, decades of research that childcare, especially high-quality childcare, has a really profound effect on childhood development. Projects like the Perry Preschool Project and the Abbasidarian Preschool Project showed that not only were there immediate benefits to children, but there were benefits to their health, to their social outcomes, to their educational attainment, and even their earnings all the way into adulthood. So it's really beneficial, especially, again, high-quality childcare. It's beneficial for children immediately, but it's also really good for parents. And I think, like you said in the introduction, we learned, a lot of us, including myself, that when you don't have childcare, it's incredibly disruptive to your ability to get your work done and to further your career. So what we saw during the downturn was that a lot of parents had disrupted income because they had to stay at home. And more often than not, that was women in the United States and in Kentucky. In fact, for the first time in decades, we saw that more women were filing unemployment insurance claims than men. And that lasted for months in the state. So it's really important for parents, but it's also really good for the economy as a whole. There are 2 to 3 times more childcare workers in Kentucky than there are coal miners. They are often women. They're disproportionately women of color. And these jobs are really important, not only for, the kids, but also for these workers. And so what we've seen, though, is that those wages tend to be really low, and that it's difficult for childcare centers to provide the type of quality that they would like to, and also provide the types of wages and benefits that they need to be able to keep their workers in place. So it's an incredibly vital service in society, but it's also one that is really troubled in a lot of ways. And I think the pandemic has demonstrated that in some profound ways.
Well, what does it mean when you say that half of Kentuckians live in a childcare desert?
Yeah, so a childcare desert is really just an area where there are either no childcare centers or there are three times as many kids as there are available childcare spots. So the Center for American Progress has put this together. They look at the census tract level, and they update it every year. And Kentucky consistently has about half of our population in a childcare desert. And more often than not, those are in rural areas, which makes it very difficult because that means that parents have to travel further in rural areas to find childcare for their kids before they head back to work, which creates all kinds of problems. So we have a situation where there really just is not enough capacity for the kids who need it.
What is a solution to that, to the rural situation, since we're talking about distance, we're talking about low population density? How do you make that work?
Yeah, there are a lot of really good solutions that we are, as a state, looking at right now. Throughout the pandemic, Kentucky received over $1 billion in federal funding through three different packages of legislation in order to try and prop up and hopefully boost our childcare industry. And in one of those, we were able to take some money and set it aside to induce new childcare centers. So that is really kind of first and foremost what needs to happen. We just need more capacity. One thing that the state is focusing on that I think is a really good idea is family childcare homes, which are people who open up their homes to childcare but are still regulated by the state, still follow all the state regulations, but they're sort of a low barrier to entry. And so the state has set up sort of technical assistance for that. They've set up incentives for childcare homes. They've also incentivized businesses to open up childcare centers at their place of work, matching grants of up to $100,000. But really what needs to happen is that families need to be able to afford childcare. So one reason why centers haven't opened up in rural parts of the state is because those parts of the state tend to, you know, not pay as much or you know, have a larger area where they have to serve. And parents find that difficult to afford. And so another thing that happened with federal legislation over the past year was that we were able to increase the eligibility limit for assistance, which was a really big deal. It's something that advocates and centers have been pushing for a long time. It waived the family copay for families who do get assistance so that there's no financial barrier to being able to use that assistance. And both of those things together, I think, really will help to make it so that, you know, childcare centers, it's worth their while to open. In addition to legislation from the last General Assembly that increased reimbursement rates to those centers, all of this together, I think, really points to a proof of concept for what we really need, which is a large, robust federal investment in childcare. And that is something that we are seeing with the Build Back Better plan.
Okay, let's take a look at this. Early in the pandemic, when there were widespread school and business closures, a lot of centers were forced to shut down and others barely made it. But then along came these three major federal relief packages that have provided financial support for the childcare industry. And the first one was the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, or CARES Act. What were the consequences for Kentucky of that tranche of money?
Kentucky received almost $68 million through the standard grant that helps pay for childcare in the state. And that money was primarily used for worker bonuses, for cleaning stipends, as well as a couple rounds of what they called sustainment stipends, which were direct payments to childcare centers based off the number of kids that they had. And that really helped workers be able to you know, come to work, but it also help make sure that centers could keep their doors open, at least there in the early months of the pandemic.
That was followed by the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act. That pretty much tripled that funding for child care. And then in round three, we have the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, that's provided Kentucky with $763 million in two separate funding sources: stabilization grants and an increase in Kentucky's child care and development block grant. So how significant is this funding, and does it set in motion a need to sustain whatever is funded?
ARPA was a huge amount of money and was really a game changer for the state and allowed the Cabinet for Health and Family Services to be really innovative in the way that they supported childcare centers. So that was $763 million. The largest part of that was $470 million that was paid out in stabilization grants. Well, is being paid out in stabilization grants on a quarterly basis, and will continue to be through 2023. The smaller but still incredibly large amount of money was through our CCDBG grant, which helps pay for childcare, and that was $293 million. Through that, the first thing we were able to do that I mentioned earlier was increase the income eligibility limit for child care assistance, which will go into effect in January, from 160% of the federal poverty level, where it's been for the last several years, up to two times the poverty level, which is really important because this is a, like I said, something that advocates have been pushing for a long time. It just starts to get into the middle class. And will help a lot of families be able to access childcare, at least until the Build Back Better plan is passed and goes into effect. The other thing it did was it allowed the state to continue to waive family copays, which it did through the earlier plans, but will continue thanks to this funding. It also provides funding for a public preschool partnership so that public preschools and childcare centers can provide full-day settings for kids. And we were also able to use that money for enhancements to quality through facility repairs and improvements, through training programs, through a pilot project for centers caring for infants, apprenticeships for various programs. I mean, it really was a broad array of wonderful things that the cabinet was able to do with that funding. And I think set us up really well for getting out of the pandemic and out of the downturn on really solid footing so that we can reverse a really long trend of center closures and low usage of childcare assistance. Of course, that money runs out and we'll need to find a way to pay for it if there isn't more federal funding. But at this point, that's the hope is that there will be.
Yeah, that was my next question because it is very short term. And so it kind of sets up a cliff that we arrive at fairly soon, 2023, 2024. And so I was wondering, what are your thoughts about what happens then?
Well, one of two things will happen. Either the Build Back Better plan will pass and we will basically be dealing with a transformative child care entitlement program that will really replace the child care assistance program in Kentucky in a lot of ways, but for the better. Or if Build Back Better doesn't pass, then the General Assembly will need to think long and hard about what of these improvements we want to keep and which of them we need to pay for, given that the General Assembly has a large surplus to deal with and more ARPA money coming down the pike. There is an opportunity for that. But again, ideally, you know, what we'll instead have is a large, robust federal amount of money that is sustained over time that provides for a much larger segment of parents and families with young children to be able to afford childcare.
The Build Back Better Act is still winding its way through Congress, and there are concerns about its cost. It's much more expensive than the infrastructure bill that was just signed into law, and how to pay that cost. What are your views on that?
Yeah, so the Build Back Better plan is incredibly sweeping in scope. Its provisions are sort of staggered over the course of 10 years in different ways. The child care component of Build Back Better in particular has a three-year ramp up before it hits its maturity and full implementation. And so although I think it cost a lot, I think it's really critical because right now the type of system we've been working off of, essentially a market-driven system for child care, has not been working. We've seen nearly half of child care centers close over the last 10 years. And that was, you know, even before the worst of the pandemic. Well, actually, it's during the pandemic. But we've seen the number of children participating in child care assistance nearly cut in half from its peak about 10 years ago. What we really need is a significant amount of federal funding, not only for kids and parents, but for really society as a whole. And Build Back Better provides that through initial three-year ramp up where successively higher income levels would be able to apply for and receive child care assistance until it tops out at about 2.5 times the state median income. So households earning about $130,000 or less, being able to access child care without having to spend more than 7% of their income on child care tuition. And that represents about 85% of families with children ages 0 to 5 in Kentucky. A third of those families wouldn't have to pay anything out of pocket for childcare. And I think that's really the kind of solution we need in order to ensure that we are getting all the benefits out of childcare that we mentioned at the top, you know, making sure that children are well cared for, that that quality is there for them, making sure parents have the peace of mind that they can put their kids in a safe place while they further their careers, and to ensure that our economy as a whole, including childcare workers, are well served through a robust industry.
That's Dustin Fugel, Senior Policy Analyst at the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy. Thank you so much, Dustin.
Thanks, Tom.
One way to gauge something is to conduct a well-crafted survey designed to give you a sense of current circumstances, trends, and consensus on a given topic. And we get that sort of information in a series of surveys about how the pandemic has affected child care in Kentucky. Here with the results of the latest is Bridget Blom, President and CEO at the Pritchard Committee for Academic Excellence. Welcome, Bridget.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
So before we dig into those survey results, why should anybody concerned about Kentucky's economic well-being and progress be equally concerned about the condition of our child care system?
For two reasons, Tom. One being child care is an important support for working families to be able to attach to the workforce. And the other reason, child care can be very important for a youngster to develop the social-emotional capacities and the readiness for school that helps them be successful in those early years.
One of the qualities of this pandemic is that it's been really revealing. It's pulled back the curtain on a lot of things that existed already. Is it fair to say that child care was fairly in crisis before the pandemic began?
Absolutely. In Kentucky, we were already looking at child care deserts in many areas of our state. So those are areas where there's very little child care and not enough child care for the families and children who might need it. We had also experienced significant declines in child care from 2008 to 2019. At that time, Kentucky lost roughly 2,000 child care centers. So we had 4,400 in 2013 and 2,400 in 2019. So there's been a decline even before the pandemic in access and availability to child care.
To quote a parent who responded to the survey, she said this: "Trouble finding childcare made it impossible for me to work. It made no sense to sacrifice half my income for in-home childcare. We made the decision to become a single-income family, and that has been tough." Is that pretty typical?
Unfortunately, through the pandemic, we are seeing that that's been the response from many families. 46% have either quit or changed jobs due to childcare issues. Even before the pandemic, childcare is so expensive, families were making those difficult decisions to trade off staying attached to the workforce or paying for childcare. Childcare can rival the cost of a college tuition. So it's a significant investment and expense for Kentucky's families. And through the pandemic, it made it especially challenging for two individuals to be out in the workforce.
This latest survey is actually the third of a series of three that have been conducted over the period of the pandemic. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. We've done surveys with parents and families and also surveys with child care providers in the first year of the pandemic to better understand the challenges that they were facing staying open.
And how recently was this latest survey conducted?
So the latest survey has been within the last year. The key findings are, one, again, 46% of families have either quit or changed jobs due to childcare. When you ask them about the challenges or the concerns that they have about not having access to childcare, 37% said their primary concern was that their youngster was missing out on important learning opportunities. 30% said they were concerned about their child's lack of social interaction because of the lack of access to childcare. And another 17% said they were concerned that their child wasn't getting the needed attention for their moment in development. And I think that's an important takeaway that probably resonates with so many families who found themselves at home through the pandemic trying to work and care for their children, whether they were small children needing childcare or older children needing assistance with school. So the lack of this childcare infrastructure in the midst of the pandemic, but also coming out of the pandemic, has really been a strain on families and on youngster learning.
Well, now we're about 2 years into this, and we've learned that this thing, this COVID, can come in waves. It can ebb and flow. And we thought we were in the clear early last summer, and then came Delta, et cetera. And so I'm just wondering, when you're trying to track something like this, is it something of a moving target as COVID seems to come in these waves?
Well, I think it's important, Tom, to remember that childcare is a small business. These are small business providers who are trying to stay in business. And so COVID has been a stress on them from a health and safety standpoint, trying to stay in business. Families needed them to be open as businesses ask employees to come back to work. And so whether COVID ebbs and flows or not, as a state, we need to help ensure that childcare is there and is sustainable through these ebbs and flows. And I think that's why you see so much investment coming from Congress. And important investment made in the last session of our General Assembly to support childcare, because these are small businesses that need to stay open.
From the perspective of the child, how important is quality childcare to a child's overall development?
Quality childcare is critically important for the young developing brain in a childcare center. In fact, some researchers would say that poor quality childcare can do more harm than good. So investing in childcare at a level of quality is important. In Kentucky, unfortunately, and in so many states, we don't invest in childcare at a level that allows the small business to maintain a level of quality. As an example, a cost of quality report that we did a few years back shows a gap of anywhere from $15 to well over $30 in the reimbursement cost from the state to childcare providers to serve low-income families. So that gives you an idea of what a difficult business this is to operate, and that the small business model really doesn't work. And that's why we see so many childcare deserts, and we see the decline of childcare over the last 5 to 8 years, and why this is such a critical issue, problem to solve as we move forward.
What can our policymakers, particularly on the state level in Frankfurt, what can they do to make things better in the childcare realm?
Well, we need to increase the eligibility threshold for one for childcare. Right now, a family that's at 160% of the federal poverty level, that's a family of four that makes just over $37,000 a year, is eligible for childcare assistance. Moving that eligibility threshold up to 200% of the federal poverty level is a move in the right direction. That's a family of four that makes $53,000 a year. Right now, those folks are on their own paying for childcare. But again, quality childcare rivals the cost of a college tuition. So increasing that threshold is important. Also increasing the reimbursement level to childcare centers for working families, so that childcare centers can maintain that high level of quality that's so important. So our General Assembly did make some moves in the right direction, and we're grateful for that. And Congress has certainly done that through the pandemic. And we're looking for additional investment in the latest congressional bill that's coming out. So those are two really important things that our policymakers can do. And the survey results in the report that you referenced shows that the voters support that. 92.5% support government investment in childcare. 72.7% support increased state funding to support working parents and childcare costs. So the public, by and large, buys into this idea that we need a high-quality, sustainable early childhood ecosystem that supports the workforce and getting our youngsters off to a strong start.
And are these surveys that we've been talking about, are they available on your website?
Yes, they are. PritchardCommittee.org. You can find our fragile ecosystem surveys. And also our reports on building blocks for Kentucky's early childhood system cost of quality study.
All right. That's Bridget Blom, President and CEO at the Pritchard Committee for Academic Excellence in Lexington. Thank you so much, Bridget.
Thank you, Tom.
Coming up after the break, why it's so hard for child care centers to hang on to staffs willing to do such vital yet difficult work.
The median wage for a child care worker in Kentucky is $9.89.
But new federal funding is making a big difference, and we'll hear how.
The child care assistance program paid for full reimbursement at about 40% of the child care programs in the state. We've used that money to increase it to pay for the full cost of 80% of the child care programs in the state.
I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
This is Wendy Barnett with the Under Maynard's Minute, bringing you local and regional arts news and events. In-person performances at the Kentucky Center for Performing Arts in Louisville are resuming just in time for this year's holiday season. Two nights in a row in December showcase some of the amazing talent we have in this region, starting with Cincinnati-based duo Over the Rhine on December 9th. They are joined by singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer. On December 10th, local musical luminaries Ben Solee and Daniel Martin Moore present Happy Holidays, with a show of Appalachian-style music, dance, and storytelling performed by Kentucky performing artists, writers, dancers, and creatives. More information available at KentuckyPerformingArts.org. For the best in writing about arts and culture of Kentucky and beyond, go to Under Main Magazine. Online at undermain.art. I'm Wendy Barnett with the Under Main Arts Minute, and now back to Eastern Standard and Tom Martin.
The public health crisis of these last 2 years has been revealing in so many areas of life, and that includes the state of child care here in Kentucky and across the country. Many child care centers were forced to close during the pandemic, giving many working parents no choice but to drop out of the workforce and stay home with the kids. Strain all around. Patricia Tennant is Chief Operating Officer at Kentucky Youth Advocates and author of an article on the organization's website on why it's so difficult for child care providers to recruit and keep teachers. Welcome, Patricia.
Thank you, Tom. It's nice to be here.
And let's jump straight into that question. Why is it so hard for child care providers to find and retain teachers?
Well, I think the crux of it is something that we've known for decades, and it's just now we can no longer ignore it. And that is the low wages that we pay our child care workforce. So the median wage for a child care worker in Kentucky is $9.89, which, you know, is well below what they could make at a fast food restaurant, at, you know, Amazon warehouse, any other options. And so it makes it really hard. You know, we know that many of our educators who really want to be there because they have a passion for our young children and want to do that as a profession, they just can't afford to stay in the field. Beyond those low wages, many of them don't come with health benefits, paid leave, retirement, all those other components that make it possible to stay within a job and to make it a long-term profession.
In your article, you say that it's also a social justice issue. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. The reality is that our childcare workforce is predominantly made up of women. And in addition, it's immigrants and women of color. And so, you know, they're the ones who are bearing the brunt and really propping up our economy, because we know that childcare is a fundamental piece of our economy that makes it possible for parents to go to work, makes it possible for employers to have those employees come into their centers to work for them. And the only way that it's working right now is to be paying such low wages. And it's really women and women of color, especially particularly, that are bearing the brunt of this lack of investment.
How is Kentucky using American Rescue Plan Act stabilization funds to support child care?
That's really good news, that those stabilization acts, you know, there's been three rounds now of federal relief funds, and we're really glad that all of those have included funding for child care. I think it's become really clear during this pandemic how important child care is to support the workforce. And so the most recent round of funds, the American Rescue Plan, included stabilization grants for centers. And it's also being used to help centers to pay their teachers higher wages. So they'll get increased grants and increased funding if they raise the salaries of their employees. And it's also going to be used to increase the rates that we reimburse those centers when they serve children who are in on subsidy. So from low-income families, they'll get an extra rate, which was so low for so long, so much so that it doesn't really cover the cost of really providing that care. So that really important and really good news, much needed for Kentucky. So we are tracking that now. You know, that lasts through 2023. So we are also really working to educate and inform our state legislators about, you know, this is really good. We need to also match that and continue to invest state funds in childcare so we can continue to make these much needed investments in a system that's just been underfunded for too long.
Well, the state legislature did allocate, I think, $12 million to support a $2 a day increase in subsidy reimbursement rates for children who are in the child care assistance program. But is that sustained and is it enough?
We celebrate it. We are so glad to see that increase. And, you know, they have continued. They have been every 2 years when the budget comes up. We've seen some incremental increases in childcare. We're so grateful. And I think it just shows that our elected officials across party lines are supportive. They understand the importance of childcare and they want to invest in it. So is it enough? No. We need much more. We're really excited about the American Rescue Plan. We are also carefully watching, you know, what's happening right now in Washington, D.C. with the reconciliation process. We are really excited to see that childcare is part of that framework that is being put forward. And we really hope to see the agreement reached and those much needed dollars flowing to Kentucky, because until we invest in our early childhood educators and in our workforce, we're never going to have the child care system that our kids need, that our families need, and that our economy needs.
Do you think this pandemic has kind of been a double-edged sword in that it's exacerbated an existing crisis, but at the same time, because there's been so much attention paid to that, awareness seems to have improved? Would you say that people seem to be more aware of this situation?
Absolutely. You know, we've been advocating for years, but we're so heartened to see so many stories of people really realizing how fundamental childcare is. And the pandemic has absolutely made that clear to people that weren't aware before. You can no longer hide your eyes through this problem.
Well, the Kentucky Chamber recently released a pretty in-depth report on workforce participation in Kentucky, and we featured that on a recent Eastern Standard. And one of the big reasons for that, in many of these counties where workforce participation is way low, I mean, I think in Elliott County, for example, it was something like 72% of the workforce is not working. And A major driver of that is the difficulty in finding childcare.
Yes, yes. You know, 50% of Kentuckians live in a childcare desert. That means that there is limited to none. There are some counties that have no licensed childcare available for parents. And the result is that, yes, it's expensive. If it's hard to get to, or if it's non-existent, that's a real barrier for parents to be able to participate in the workforce. You know, I've heard of studies in an area in Montreal. They invested in their childcare system, and the result was they saw their labor force participation go up exponentially, and that wasn't even a goal. but I think if you would make it easy and accessible and affordable for people, that would have huge dividends in terms of helping people actually get a job and sustain that job and participate.
Well, you mentioned Montreal. Are there other examples of superior childcare systems out there in the world that we ought to look at to yeah. model for guidance?
Oh, there's so many. The truth is that we are the outlier compared to other wealthy countries. We invest so much less. I saw a study, you know, in some European countries, they invest per child upwards of $20,000 per year just for childcare. In the U.S., the average is $500 per child. So I think that's the key thing that we need to be aware of is, you know, we're talking about children, usually for young children, often that their parents are young or on the younger end. They might be early on in their earning potential, in their careers. And, you know, the cost of childcare is the same as what you would pay for a four-year tuition for a college. And so, you know, we often hear about people saving money, you know, for their children's college education. Well, there's no saving money for childcare because, you know, you don't have that time and that potential. And so I think that just speaks to, you know, it is a public good. It's something that we all need and would benefit from. And therefore, we need to have public investment. We can't continue to ask our parents to bear the brunt of the cost. We can't continue to ask our childcare workforce to bear the brunt of the cost. I think it's time to have sustained public investment in this critical resource.
Well, you know, I'm struggling with this because it seems so obvious, it seems so logical that we would connect the two, that helping people get out there and work by taking care of their children in a quality setting would make all the sense in the world. Why can't we do this?
We can do this, Tom. That's the good news. We've seen momentum. We've got the opportunity right here, right in front of us. I think, you know, with what's happening in D.C., and we need to do this. I think for too long when it came to, especially with childcare compensation, there was kind of this attitude, well, you know, they make so little. Why do we invest in childcare workers? Why would we ask anybody to do it? It's not a job that we'd want anybody to do because it can't pay the wages. That's the wrong way of looking at it. We need to be tackling it with a, how can we fix this? And this is fundamentally important. And why haven't we done it yet? Back years ago, and under President Nixon, actually, there was a proposal that would have had a universal kind of childcare system that didn't make it across, unfortunately. It's been something that people have been aware of and thinking about for decades. There's no better time than now. Now that everybody, I think there is bipartisan support, people are aware of it. And there's no better time than right now to really come together and have an agreement and make this sustained investment that we desperately need.
All right. That's Patricia Tennan, Chief Operating Officer at Kentucky Youth Advocates. And thank you so much, Patricia.
Great to be here, Tom. I appreciate it.
One, two, three, four. Joining us now from Frankfurt, Sarah Vanover, Director of the Division of Child Care in the Cabinet for Health and Family Services. She has clocked 22 years in the field of early child care as a teacher, a director, a trainer, and a college professor for other early childhood educators. Today, she holds a major role in shaping child care policy for the Commonwealth. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Vanover.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So Dustin Bugle just painted a statistical portrait of Kentucky child care, and it was a pretty fragile industry before this pandemic descended on us. But would you say these last 2 years have been especially hard?
Yes, definitely. And I agree with Dustin. Beforehand, we had issues with finding staff, centers spending all of their money on staff and facilities. Even for-profit centers really don't make a profit. Parents having to pay high costs that barely meet the center's needs. And now in the past year and a half, we've seen staff-to-child ratios have to be lowered so that additional health and safety needs can be met. So that means less income coming into the center, but higher staffing costs. And so it's become even more of a challenge.
The National Association for the Education of Young Children estimated that states would lose up to 40% of child care programs during the pandemic. Has that happened in Kentucky? How has Kentucky fared?
That has not happened in Kentucky. That was the initial estimate that we saw around March to April 2020. And Kentucky has done well as far as most of our programs held on through the hardest part of the pandemic. We lost approximately 9% of our child care programs, which any loss is a huge loss in a state that already had areas designated as child care deserts where there was not enough. But we are very grateful that we didn't approach that 40%. There were other states that lost more programs than Kentucky even had to start off with. So some states were hit very hard.
Well, back in the winter and spring of this year, there was a pretty significant decline in the number of Kentucky children enrolled in the Child Care Assistance Program. But by midsummer, those numbers had improved, and it was seen as an indication that parents were going back to work. Has that improvement continued?
Yes, we have seen an increase recently. In order to be in the child care assistance program, the family has to either work 20 hours per week or they would have to be enrolled as a full-time student. Of course, we know that during the pandemic, many businesses shut down or were temporarily shut down. And so we saw a decrease in the families that were able to accept CCAP. I think at our lowest number, we dipped down to about 19,000 families. So within the past 5 to 6 months, we've seen that number increasing. We're now up to about 29,000 children enrolled in subsidy, which is almost where it was prior to the pandemic. We were around 29 to 30,000 at the time when the pandemic initially began.
Already existing before the COVID outbreak was the matter of affordable child care. And hasn't it been true that in many would-be two-paycheck households, one parent does the numbers and realizes after doing the math that their paycheck would just be eaten up by child care costs? So what's the point?
There are families that have to make that decision, and it depends a lot on how many children they have in child care at one time. I can say that as a working mom myself, I had an infant and a toddler in child care at once, and the cost was $400 a month more than my mortgage. Now, if we had decided, my husband and I have decided for me to stay home, there are other things that I wouldn't have lost that weren't just paycheck related, like the ability to have health insurance or the fact that when a parent leaves the job field to watch their children, to be the primary caretaker during the day, when they choose to re-enter the child care field, they typically don't enter back at the same pay level or the same advancement in their career. So a lot of times they have to take a step back and re-enter at lower pay. And so some families decide that overall it is more beneficial for them to stay in despite the cost. And then there are a lot of social benefits for children to be in a child care program, to learn to interact with other children their age, and to get those school readiness skills that they might not get by staying at home with an adult who may not know how to help introduce those skills.
Well, we talked to Dustin Pugel about the Build Back Better Act, which is the next shoe to drop in Washington. But one shoe has already dropped, and that was the federal funding provided by the American Rescue Plan Act and then the Child Care and Development Block Grant and so forth. How will Kentucky Child Care benefit from the, I think it's $763 million in federal monies provided by the American Rescue Plan Act?
There are going to be so many projects that benefit child care from this money. Now, the predominant portion of that money that the federal government gave to us was designated for sustainability payments for child care programs that have been open for the past year and a half and really gone through hardships with the reduced income and higher expenses. That'll be $470 million of that that's dedicated specifically to those sustainability payments. Kentucky is dividing those up in 9 payments over just over a 2-year time period to help benefit the child care programs and make sure that not only are there basic bills being met, mortgage, insurance, utilities, those kinds of things, but also to help predominantly with staffing costs and to try and drive the cost up for staffing, to pay higher salaries, to make sure that dedicated child care providers can stay in the field and make the wages they need to pay their own bills. The other portion of that comes from the Child Care and Development Block Grant, and it will be approximately $293 million. And it goes to a lot of different projects. It was designated for different things. One of the big pushes that they wanted us to use for that money was to serve underserved populations, such as children living in poverty or experiencing homelessness, children with disabilities, lots of different underserved populations. And so a large portion of that fund, about $200 million of the $293 million, is going to the Child Care Assistance Program. Not only are we increasing the reimbursement rate, previously, before this money, the Child Care Assistance Program paid for full reimbursement at about 40% of the child care programs in the state. We've used that money to increase it to pay for the full cost of 80% of the child care programs in the state. But we also are increasing the entrance point before families could enter the Child Care Assistance Program if they were at 160% of the poverty level. We're increasing that number to families who make up to 200% of the federal poverty level. And so a lot of families that barely missed that cutoff but were still struggling to pay for child care will now be able to use those funds to help with their costs. Other big projects with that funding, a lot of it is going towards workforce development for our child care providers, with a huge emphasis on scholarships for more degrees in the field of early childhood, more training, particularly helping child care providers to have more training to work with children with special needs, directors to have more business training, and an emphasis on the apprenticeship program in Kentucky that will train child care providers starting at the high school level and help make them workforce ready when they graduate.
Well, a big portion of the Kentucky population, and in fact many of our listeners, live in areas that are so-called child care deserts. They don't have accessibility. What kind of thinking is going on in your office about accommodating those needs?
A lot of it has to do with the location and the population of families in those areas. So, for example, in eastern Kentucky, child care centers don't typically do as well because they need many families to be successful. And since families are spaced farther apart in child care desert areas and rural areas, a lot of families aren't usually able to travel to the same center and then the center closes. So in rural areas, family child care homes tend to excel much more. And that's usually where a provider has a child care program within their own home, and 3 to 4 families utilize that. In order to encourage the development of more family child care homes, we're doing a lot of startup grants during this money, and we've already been offering some of those startup grants through CARES Act funding and CRISA Act funding, the 2 previous rounds of federal funding. But we'll be continuing to recruit family child care homes to serve the more rural areas of the state and to also just cover those desert areas. Another thing that we're doing in desert areas is matching grants for new centers that will be in those desert areas. So if there is an area that could sustain a child care center, then we'll put up matching funds to start that program with a company that would like to match that grant amount.
I guess it could be said that child care center workers are sort of poster children for the overworked and underpaid among us. And I wonder if you could give us a sense of the typical things a child care center worker deals with in a given day, like managing separation anxiety or changing diapers, dealing with bullying, parents who show up late to pick up children and such, all that while taking on the challenges of developing such things as intellectual curiosity and getting along with others. It's a lot of work, isn't it?
It's a huge amount of work. It's a very physical job. You're doing a lot to pick up children and carry them and help change diapers and comfort them, hold them when they need you to. But it's also a very intellectual job for our child care providers because, again, you're basically starting to teach the scientific method to children at a young age. Why is this happening? Let's test it out. When I build this block tower too tall, why does it keep falling down? How high can we build it without it falling? You know, taking care of a room full of children is a very challenging job, but then also you have to think that you also are caring and supporting the parents. Child care providers see parents twice a day, typically drop off and pick up, where you think K through 12 schools rarely see the families. So you really are partnering with the families and the children as a child care provider. You're helping parents understand the process of child development. Many of them don't know whether certain skills are developmentally appropriate. And in a lot of ways, child care providers become a member of the extended family because they know so much about the children. And they have to share that information and communicate with the parents. Because parents and families, they miss seeing those things happen every day when they're at work. And so there has to be good communication back and forth. Along with having a very rich conversation in the room, even for infants and toddlers, sharing conversation and letting babies listen to you and learn to repeat those sounds that you're making, you think that you're helping children learn to socialize with each other. And when you have a room full of toddlers and preschoolers and you're trying to get them to share and play together, it can be very challenging, teaching children that they have to use their words instead of hitting one another. You have to be that person who can see everything that's going on in the room at one time. Like we always said that mom has eyes in the back of their head. Well, you know, that's in a home where mom has two or three children. But if you're in a room with 22-year-olds and two adults, then you really have to see everything that's going on to make sure that nobody's getting hurt, to make sure that health and safety demands are always met. And then to add reading and language experiences and play-based learning to the environment. High-quality programs also do developmental assessments and help parents know what skills and milestones children are meeting and when they aren't. There's messy play in the classroom, which is essential so children can develop sensory skills. But that means that while children are finger painting and playing with slime and those kinds of things, that the child care provider comes home covered in slime and Play-Doh and finger paint every day. It's a job that is extremely rewarding, but is extremely taxing as well.
Well, I was pretty much sold back there on being in a room with 22-year-olds. That's Sarah Vanover, Director of the Division of Child Care in the Cabinet for Health and Family Services in Frankfurt. That wraps this week's edition. Eastern Standard is produced at the studios of Dynamics Productions. Mike Savage is our executive producer, Wendy Barnett producer, Neil Kesterson producing engineer and audio editor, Ella Fitzgeraldine studio dog. You can find us online at weku.org or esweku.org, on the WEKU mobile app, and on NPR One, iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Would you like to suggest a topic? Drop us a line at es@eku.edu. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.